Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of December 10th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. Well, what's not doing so well, D.R., I think, is, how shall we say, American society under the onslaught of the conservative Republican agenda that wants to roll back taxes. So we've all heard about this tax bill that got hustled through in the middle of the night in the Senate while they were still scribbling and writing on it by hand. All of the abuses, everyone's heard about that. One of the things I wanted to sort of touch on was the implication of this horrendous tax plan for renewable energies in particular, sort of climate change issues in general, right? There's a bunch of them. I've made up my own list. DR, have you seen anything? Let me let you start. What have you seen in the tax bill that climate hawks ought to know about? How does that whatever financial mechanism going to work, right?
According to the LA Times, The most significant Senate tax provision is meant to tilt a 40-year-old conflict between the oil industry and conservationists by opening a 1.5 million acre stretch of the Arctic National Wildlife Reserve to energy exploration. The other provisions in the bill, according to the LA Times, are quote, a boost to White House fossil fuel energy initiatives. One would treat in tax investments for wind and solar plants as income and levy a tax on them, which is liable to force big investors out of the American clean energy market. So it's basically the Senate version of this tax bill launching an assault and a really savage assault on clean energy and another element of an attack.
Go ahead.
Part of the attack in the Senate tax bill is the elimination of the $7,500 federal tax credit for buying electric vehicles as well. So that's another attack.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess the one that I find most interesting because it's my understanding that the solar, the bill is silent, so this piece of junk tax bill is silent on the question of solar subsidies, right? And I think it cuts back, as you said, the production tax credit has some risk. But the real sleeper issue is something that you referenced. It's called the acronym is BEAT, which is something, Border Entry Anti-Abuse Tax, I think is the acronym. I'll say that again, the Border Entry Anti-Abuse Tax, BEAT. And the idea there is that if a foreign financial institution, like a bank in Europe, wanted to fund a wind turbine development in the United States, they can do that. But there is a 100% tax on any profits that bank would try to withdraw from the United States, right? Tell me if I get that story wrong. But that kind of thing, a 100% tax on what the financial institution would earn from funding clean energy, is basically a killer for renewable energy projects across the country. Am I getting that story right?
Yes, that's my understanding. So you can imagine that this is like a Koch brothers fantasy come to life, basically.
And this is in the bill, and it's just, I mean, it's a I don't know. There's been a lot of superlatives, shall we say, negative superlatives to try and describe this bill, but this is a particularly egregious assault on renewable energy, or will have consequences. It's not even clear to me this BEAT tax is specifically targeting clean energy stuff, but it will in fact have a consequence of freezing a lot of development, having a big hit on development, right?
And essentially, you know, benefiting by implication, you know, slowing down the clean energy growth in the United States, but basically allowing the other major countries to basically, you know, take over and run the table. I think we're both old enough to remember when people used to fear that Japan and China would outpace the United States in terms of productivity and manufacturing. And now when it comes to clean energy, we're, you know, the Trump administration is basically telling other countries, go ahead and beat us.
Yeah. And part of this whole, you say, I mean, other countries would have the clean energy revolution. At the same time, in this bill, it does not touch any of the fossil fuel subsidies, right? So this all the R&D development stuff for Exxon and whatnot, that's all sacred and that's all protected. Mm-hmm. But these things that go to renewable energies are hit. Not a good thing. I mean, I read somewhere that this bill is essentially, this tax bill is what you might think of the weaponization of tax policy for the benefit of, the aristocracy and the oligarchy in the United States. And you probably, I'm sure you've seen the things that say the state and local tax, the SALT, S-A-L-T, state and local tax deduction, is primarily going to hit states in the blue states, right? Mm-hmm. Where no one's going to vote for this tax bill anyway. So they hit the SALT, the state and local tax deduction. And what that does is it's sort of this backhanded way of achieving the conservative dream of forcing like New York and Massachusetts governments to shrink. Because once you can't deduct your state and local taxes, all of a sudden the rebound from that is that people start to demand that the state of Massachusetts lower its tax rate, right? Because the taxes are so high. And that's just what these trolls want to do. They want to force Massachusetts to have less of a safety net, less of the kind of economy. And that's all tied up in this tax bill. So the point being that the tax weaponization of the tax policy to go after blue states, but also after renewable energy, and basically to destroy these things because these guys know how to do it. I heard someone refer to it as a cold civil war, where, you know, the red states have all gotten together and figured out how they can take money from the blue states. We're not actually firing any guns back and forth, but
it's tax policy is revenge, basically.
Yeah. I mean, and when is that, you know, in American history, that's not a good thing. Right. Basically exploiting and screwing over your political opponents with tax policy because you can get away with it is. And so let's go back to the other favorite topic. You brought up ANWR, right? ANWR, Alaskan National Wildlife Reserve. It's some huge expanse. I've never been there. I've seen pictures of it up on the northern slope of Alaska. Pristine, protected, has been. The GOP and the oil companies have been salivating over that for decades. For some reason, they want to get in and destroy that last little gem on the North Shore of Alaska. And I think that part of what's driving this thing in the tax bill is that I think the federal government can claim some amount of income from the leases in ANWR over the next 10 years. And of course, that income then gets to go right into the pocket of the rich people are going to benefit from this tax bill, right? I mean, they're trying to identify as much income as they can, and it's just, it's an outrage. It's an outrage.
Indeed.
I talk myself out, right?
it's a taxing situation, isn't it?
It's a taxing situation. So I guess, so the message that I have here on this tax bill is that while it has now, this tax bill now has a huge amount of momentum, it is not a done deal yet. So here's the play. As you know, the House of Representatives passed their excrescence of a tax bill, right? So they've got theirs, and the Senate passed a different putrid tax bill. And so now the House and the Senate have to get together and they have to reconcile, as they say. A committee will try and take these two bills and put them into one bill, right? That which then both houses have to pass the exact same wording. Right? And so right now that process is underway with the House, you'll hear the phrase on TV, the House and Senate conferees will get together and try and review all the hand scribbles on the Senate bill and try and make them somehow compatible with whatever the House passed. And there are many minefields there, right? I think that you mentioned one at the top of the show, Dia, that they're, the Climate Caucus wants them to pull the ANWR, the leasing of the ANWR. They want that out of the tax bill, right? And so in this zero-sum game where all the money has been committed to the Koch brothers, so if they don't get the money from ANWR, then they have to raise revenue somewhere else, and then someone else gets upset. We can only hope that the greed and avarice of all these people collapses on itself, because they can't all figure out how to get the bill reconciled between the House and Senate, right?
There's no honor among thieves, is there?
And what I've been seeing on TV, and I would, if you have a congressperson of either the House or the Senate, a member of Congress who has voted for this thing, now is the time to go to their office and explain to them forcefully how they should not vote for the final package, right? As people begin to realize what these people in Congress have voted for, and they realize how they're going to get screwed. I mean, what I've seen is all the folks in districts of New York that have Republican congressmen all of a sudden have a lot of people in their office want to know about the state and local tax deduction thing. Right? And that's the method now, right, to try and put enough. I mean, you can do that. You can go to your congressperson and try and convince them to vote against whatever the final compromise is. You can cross your fingers and hope that Donald Trump decides it's mean after all, and that really he wants to just screw up the process and he'll veto the final bill.
Who was it that said that power concedes nothing without a demand?
Again? I think it's a guy named Frederick. What's his last name? Frederick Douglass. Yes. Yes. All right. So look, there's the tax bill. Go call your congressman. It's not quite over yet. So I saw something. Speaking of money, a couple other things I saw. There was an article, DR, that I saw about Bitcoin. Have you ever heard of something called Bitcoin?
Yes, yes.
So Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency. It is a currency that only exists online, okay? And it is, the curious thing about Bitcoin is that, so the analogy is that the U.S. dollar historically, right, back in the time of the Civil War, the U.S. dollar was backed by a gold bar at Fort Knox. So every U.S. dollar had a gold bar at Fort Knox, right? Bitcoin is somewhat equivalent, except that what creates the value of Bitcoin are these computer calculations that basically reconcile a big spreadsheet in the sky, right? And that calculation keeps getting more and more complex, so it's harder and harder to generate Bitcoins, right? So fine. It turns out that a guy named Eric Holthaus, I think his name is, I don't know if you saw the article, but he's arguing that Bitcoin, because there's some fantastic amount of carbon emissions associated with the computations that create a Bitcoin, which is just this bizarre, I guess I'd never thought of it that way, but that the creation of Bitcoin, which is, you know, thousands of servers are now whirring away trying to solve this sort of puzzle kind of thing that generates Bitcoin value, there's a lot of carbon dioxide emission associated with that. And so he's saying that Bitcoin will kill us all. That's greed and money and greed are the root of all evil.
Indeed. It's...
So I think what I'm going to do is buy a server farm and some wind turbines and power my server farm with wind turbines so that my money will be, my Bitcoin will be very clean.
Exactly.
I don't know. But then, so there's a couple other things. We go back to the tax issue for a minute that I sort of wanted to put the idea out into the world the crazy tax bill, we're going to go back and talk about the tax bill again. The underlying driver of the tax bill is that by giving money to very rich people and corporations, they will invest it and create new jobs, right? It's classic trickle-down economics, that money that goes to the most wealthy will somehow trickle down and affect everyone else. Well, it turns out there's essentially no economic science evidence to support that. In fact, all of the experience, almost all of the experience is the opposite. That is, it's at best neutral and at worst damaging to do these kinds of tax cuts at the very high end. But still the mythology persists. And I read an article somewhere, I'll have to think of where I saw it, but basically comparing the Republicans' fervent belief in trickle-down economics in the absence of fact, and in fact, in the face of counterexamples that trickle-down economics doesn't work, they continue to insist that this tax plan is going to pay for itself and we're all going to be better off. And they drew the analogy to climate, right? It's a belief in something that's not real, or a denial of real facts in order to serve your ideology. And it's just, I mean, so the tax bill is just one more example of the kind of deliberate ignorance of a significant part of the population. Would you agree?
Yes, there's a Dana Nucciatelli who wrote that great piece in The Guardian. Basically, you know, the idea of ideology overriding facts and overriding logic. And he does make the comparison between the trickle-down economics ideology and the ideology of climate change denial. And of course, noting that the same people who push one tend to push the other.
Yeah, what a coincidence.
And also the reverse is true, in the sense that, you know, it is those associated with right wing politics that have raised questions about trickle down economics and the efficacy of trickle down economics, that have also, you know, divorced themselves to a certain extent from climate change denial. And of course, those figures are you know, essentially outcasts on the right. I think of particularly an individual by the name of Bruce Bartlett, who's a former Reagan advisor, who began to question trickle down economics and basically say, you know, it doesn't really work. And for that, he was basically forced right out of the Republican Party. And so it's that sort of dynamic that, you know, one is forced to choose between ideology and reality. And as we've seen, you know, too many people are too willing to choose ideology over reality.
Yeah. But we don't. We try always. I prefer reality. I prefer to be reality-based as to the extent I can. I'm not always good at it. Sometimes I can delve into little sessions of non-reality, but I try and pull myself back to the way the real world works. And I know you do too, and all of our listeners do. I mean, to err is human, but man. Anyway, we got to stop there, DR. Let me just tell everyone that we will put up links to most of what we talked about on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can click through to the blog and the SoundCloud link. You can find us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, etc., etc., etc. And, of course, we're on iTunes. So we will close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
Your wisdom is always appreciated. Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.